Coming up on Golf Today, Michelle Wee West has scaled the heights in a major, but this week she is the host of the Mizuho at Liberty National. Weezy stops by for a chat and a preview of the LPGA. It has been an emotional season for Rory McIlroy, but he's back to work in Philly with a title to defend. What is next for the world number two? What mountain can he climb next? Plus, Billy Horschel has an update on his health, and it means he will miss some time. When will we see him again? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Tuesday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine, and I'm feeling a little wistful, I gotta be honest. I've been invited many times to play the Philadelphia Cricket Club, host of the Truist this week, and I've said no. Michael Bamberger, longtime member, has invited me time and time again. My buddy's trip spigot has run dry since I've had kids, Eamon, and I'm a little bit bummed out about it.
I'm sure, well, Michael's obviously one of the best writers in golf for the last 30 years. I'm sure he'll have you out at some point. I think I played 9 holes there once in the depths of winter.
Oh.
Many, many years ago. Not a great experience, I suppose, to experience the course at its best. But I'm really looking forward to this week because it's so rare these days that you actually get to see the best in the world play on a golf course that is absolutely as much a character as the players themselves. And a lot of tour venues, a lot of venues in professional golf around the world have become somewhat commoditized in terms of the players knowing what they're getting and kind of the TPC school of design, which is designed for tournaments.
Right.
This is not that kind of golf course. This is real old school quality golf, and it's going to be a fun watch.
Classic design. Why don't we learn a bit more about the PGA Tour stop this week, the Truist Championship. It's the 6th of 8 signature events on the year. Where'd the time go? And this year, the event is being held at Philadelphia Cricket Club as Quail Hollow gets ready for next week's PGA Championship. A little history lesson. Philly Cricket Club is one of the oldest private clubs in the United States, founded in 1854. The Wissahickon course, designed by A.W. Tillinghast, Tilly the Terror, as he was known. He was a member of the club, opened for play back in 1922.
The Wissahickon course has hosted a number of premier national and regional events over the years. Bernhard Langer wasn't there when it opened, although Beans has always been around a very long time. This was the 2016 Senior Players' Championship, now known as the College Companies Championship. Langer won that with a score of 1 over par. Some other notable events over the years. It has hosted the Philadelphia Open 6 times, most recently in 2022. The 1939 winner there, Sam Bird, for history nerds. He's the only man ever to compete in both a World Series and a Masters. Most recently, of course, it held the US Amateur 4-ball. That was last summer. And for more on Philadelphia Cricket Club, we welcome in Todd Lewis.
Yeah, hi there, guys. And Damon, as you mentioned, this golf course, the Wissahickon Golf Course, which will host the Truist Championship, designed by A.W. Tillinghast, who is an icon in regards to golf course design. He designed Baltusrol, Bethpage, Wingfoot, just to name a few. He's in the World Golf Hall of Fame. So he's got his fingerprints on this golf course. As a matter of fact, he considered Philly Cricket Club his home course. And when he passed, his ashes were spread in the Wissahickon Creek here on property. But that's the past. What about the future for the PGA Tour players competing in the Truist Championship this week? What does this golf course offer? Well, it's not a very long golf course, a par 70, and on the card it's just over 7,100 yards. But there are some defenses here. One is the bunkering. 118 bunkers on property, which is more bunkers than any other course that the PGA Tour players have faced so far in 2025. And you also notice that there are very few collars around these greens. So the trouble will be right up against the putting surfaces. And in regards to those putting surfaces, the shapes of these greens, lots of slope and movement. You have to control your speed on these greens or you could have a day full of three putts. For tour players, they feel they are going back in time playing Philly Cricket Club.
It's a lot of fun, really like a trip back in time, really interesting green complexes, not crazy demanding off the tee for most of the holes, and then especially 17 and 18, tournament 17 and 18 are really long, challenging par fours, so it's a good mix of gettable holes, really fun mix of par three distances, everything from 122 to 230 yards. I've hit gap wedge to 7 wood in the par threes, and really, really fun mix of golf.
Can you kind of get a sense of how this course is going to play in relation to score?
That's a really good question. Depends where the hole locations are. The greens aren't quite as fast or as firm as I know they could get with the rain we've been having, and it's a little early in the season to have really thick rough. So that makes me think that scores could be pretty low, but it depends. If they tuck those pins and put them on some little shelves, it could be a little more difficult.
Yeah, I played 16 holes yesterday. Pretty much as old school gets, I would say. Forgiving off the tee, but you kind of got to be on the right side of the fairway. Green complexes are amazing. Kind of a not as quite as severe as Wingfoot, you know, both Tillinghast designs, but not as many levels and shelves as Wingfoot, but similar look, similar feel, the way you got to come into the greens. Yeah, most cases long's no good, so pretty old school.
As you're learning the golf course, can you get a sense of what scoring is going to be like this week?
Yeah, I mean, like anywhere else, it depends on conditions. You know, if we get a big wind or something, it'll be one thing. But, you know, we got rain early in the week. Fairways are still bouncing out. Greens were receptive, so that usually equals low scores out here. And the greens are absolutely perfect. So, yeah, probably some low scores unless we get something crazy.
Finally, as someone who's played out here a long time, how would you define old school?
Just this. You know, just an old school design. There's really no tricks, no frills. It's not overly long. I know we got a couple par fives that are four, so those will be some long holes. But just big greens and got slopey, but not crazy. Yeah, just old school, just what you think.
Well, you heard Lucas talk about these greens. Right now, they are soft. We've had some rain at the beginning of the week, but as we move through the week, the sun is going to come out, and these greens are expected to dry out a bit more. And these are bent grass greens. You don't see a lot of bent grass greens on the PGA Tour schedule. So this is a first for Philly Cricket Club hosting a PGA Tour event, and this is a first-time sponsorship for Truist, the Truist Championship, a new sponsor on the PGA Tour. Now, they are based in Charlotte, and normally this event would be held in Charlotte at Quail Hollow, but with the PGA Championship next week, well, they've yielded to the PGA of America and moved here to Philadelphia. But they have a brand new trophy to present to the champion, and it is unique to Philly Cricket Club. Check this out. This is a silver cricket bat. It's unique to Philly Cricket Club, as I mentioned. This is a one-and-done trophy. So if you win this week, you're going to get that trophy, and it may be the only one that will be presented on the PGA Tour, because we're unsure if the Truist Championship or any other tournament is going to return to Philly Cricket Club. I did talk to the PGA Tour, and they said in regards to the trophy for next year at Quail Hollow, they will have something that represents more of Charlotte. Not sure if that's going to mean NASCAR or barbecue, but whatever the case, it's a cool trophy they're handing out this Sunday.
Beautiful trophy, rivals the trophy at the B flat at my tennis club. I must say, great stuff from T. Lou with his finger on the pulse of the PGA Tour, folks. We'll talk to Todd in just a little bit. Once again, Rory McIlroy, defending champ this week, four-time winner of the Truist, all at Quail Hollow 2010, 2015, 2021, and last year. He is the world number two, making his first start on tour since finishing T12 at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with his good buddy, Shane Lowry. Let's take a look at how Rory has performed since the 2024 Truist victory. I'd say he's done pretty good. Four wins, including the Masters, three runner-up finishes, 13 top fives in 23 starts. Now, Eamon, Rory's resume in Philadelphia is a little bit thin. He did shoot 62 at Aronimink in the first round in 2018. He shot four rounds in the 60s on that Donald Ross design, finished solo fifth. He should be running downhill. Maybe the only question is the Masters hangover and then the fun with Shane, but I got to think he's running downhill at this point in the year, and it's more of a question of energy and not having a letdown after all of the emotion of last month.
It would be curious to know what his goals were starting 2025. Because my guesses would be that win the Masters, win the Open at Portrush, win the Ryder Cup on the road. Well, he's one for one so far, and he's got a few months before the next one comes around. He obviously has the players in the bag as well. I think it's good for him that this isn't in a venue that he's won before, because then it just simply becomes another warm-up. It's another prep tournament. Yes, his name is on the trophy, well, the old trophy, I guess, four times as a prior winner of this championship back when it was, you know, variously the Wells Fargo and other names over the years. But I think not being in that venue, not being the same kind of sense, not the same trophy, not really the same structure around the tournament, it's good for him because it simply reduces the pressure. There's no expectation on him this week, even as a former champion. The expectation's on him next week when he goes to Quail Hollow, where he has won multiple times. In fact, I saw a tweet this morning, Jordan Spieth kind of jokingly referring to Quail Hollow as Rory McIlroy Country Club, which, you know, there's merit to that as well.
For
the
sure.
The fact that he doesn't have a history at Philadelphia, doesn't have a history at the cricket club, doesn't have a history looking for this cricket bat trophy at the Truist either, I think it's a release valve for Rory McIlroy. I don't think it comes with the pressure if, say, he was going back to Quail Hollow and the PGA was being played somewhere else a week later. I think there would be more expectation on him given the record.
He's so accomplished. He's such a fun person, in my opinion, to interview. I love listening to what he has to say. But over the last decade, there's always been a little feeling of something's missing. Even as he was winning trophies, there was a gap. There was a want. There was a but. Now I'm just curious and going to be fun to watch him going forward. What does he sound like now? The game's going to be there, but what is he saying? What's going to get him out of bed each morning? Ryder Cup on the road, no question about it. Sixth major, seventh major, as important as the Masters? Probably not. But just, you know, what's going to be the fire that keeps him chasing after great things? Is it Nick Faldo in six majors? Is it double digits?
It's kind of hard to say. I'm very curious to see what happens when he's next in contention in a major, which we could just simply be about 10 or 11 days away from at this point. Because what we saw when he was in contention the last few years was a little bit of fragility. And we saw that on Sunday at Augusta as well, the sense that it had been so long since he'd won a major, regardless of whether or not it was the Masters. But the pressure was very evident. We saw that at St. Andrews in 22, and he couldn't buy a putt on that Sunday. We saw it with a middle of the back nine stumble at LACC in the US Open in 23. We certainly saw it with a couple of short misses late in the day at Pinehurst last year.
Yes.
In the US Open. Now, I get the sense that that green jacket could be something of a coat of armor for Rory McIlroy, because he has now solidified his place in the absolute most elite club in the history of the game. That's six members who've won all the majors. I don't think he thinks about the Faldo record of six major titles as a European or the fact that he's tied Seve with five. I think he's now in a different ether out there as the career Grand Slam holder. And I'm just curious to see if he plays with a freedom in that sense. If he is in the mix come Quail Hollow or at Oakmont or at Portrush, I don't think he's going to feel as though he has as much at stake as he would have had, certainly if that Masters had gone against him. That almost doesn't bear thinking about what the psychological consequences would have been of that. But the fact that he does have that green jacket, to me, is more likely to give him a little more freedom when he's put in that position again. And he's putting himself in that position a lot every year.
With that Masters Sunday, he hopped over a lot of great players in terms of where he sits in the game of golf over the last couple of centuries in this game we watched. So great to have Rory McIlroy in the field this week in Philadelphia. Tee times are out, by the way. Split tees. 12:26 p.m. Eastern with Justin Thomas and Tommy Fleetwood. Can't wait till Thursday.
Well, it's just 143 days until matches get underway at the Ryder Cup, so it's never too early for the rest of us to start speculating and second-guessing. It's never too early for some team bonding either. Keegan Bradley gathering prospective team members for dinner tonight. More on that and who's on the guest list after this break.
Back on golf today, what a Sunday it was on the PGA Tour as world number one reminded everybody. Scottie Scheffler winning the CJ Cup Byron Nelson for his 14th career win on tour. Finished the week at 31 under par, 253, matching the low 72-hole score in PGA Tour history. Now, he wasn't the only winner over the weekend. Over on LIV, reigning U.S. Open champ Bryson DeChambeau notched his third LIV Golf victory. Some 48-foot birdie putt, by the way, on 17. LIV Golf Korea. The win marked his first since the U.S. Open title at Pinehurst number 2 last summer. Win for the Crushers, as they're called, as well. We take a look at the U.S. Ryder Cup standings at this point. It'll be 6 automatic picks and then 6 captain's picks after the BMW. So got a little time for this qualifying process to shake out. With more on the U.S. squad, let's say hello once again to Todd Lewis, who has a little bit more information on Team USA.
Yeah, Damon, tonight is a big night for Keegan Bradley and the United States Ryder Cup team, because tonight Keegan Bradley here in Philadelphia will be hosting a dinner for players that will likely be on his Ryder Cup team that will compete at Bethpage. Invited to the dinner, the current top 20 players in the United States Ryder Cup standings. Also invited are members of the 2023 United States Ryder Cup team that lost in Rome, and last year's United States team that competed for the President's Cup at Royal Montreal. Now, there's some significant players that will be there and one that will not be there. As for those who will be there, not only those players that I mentioned that are invited, but there are a couple players that play on LIV Golf that are going to make the trip up to Philadelphia to be a part of this dinner tonight. Those players are Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, so they will be meeting tonight and having dinner with Keegan Bradley and possible teammates for the United States Ryder Cup team. One player that will not be there tonight is world number one Scottie Scheffler. Now, Scheffler is not playing this week in the Truist Championship, and I talked to Keegan Bradley about the absence of Scheffler, and he said, I talked to Scottie about this, and he completely understands that he wants to spend some time with his family prior to traveling to Charlotte to compete in the PGA Championship, so he has an excused absence. And Keegan is very excited about this evening and kind of bringing unity to this team as they get ready to try to win it at Bethpage. Guys?
Todd, I hope Keegan's probably going to need a good week to actually pick up the tab for this dinner tonight. He's also in the mix as a potential player on his own team, and he hasn't ruled that out. Do you get any sense that he's struggling to balance the demands of the captaincy and the desire to play and play at a high level?
Well, I think it's natural, Eamon, for Keegan Bradley to struggle with that management. He's told me that when he's here at the golf course preparing for an event or competing in an event on the PGA Tour, obviously his focus is there. And when he steps off property, then he puts another hat on as the Ryder Cup captain. But that is very challenging to compartmentalize. When I talked to him this morning about this dinner tonight, he kind of got emotional about how excited he is to stand in front of that room and look at all these great players and understand that they have great friendships, and something that he didn't really have early in his career. He didn't make a lot of friendships out here on the PGA Tour. He kind of saw his competing players as enemies, but he loves that now. He's really bought into that, and he is going to use that power to try to bring this team together. But at the same time, as you mentioned, he would love to qualify for this team. He would love to make this team himself. And to automatically qualify, yes, he would. He said if he automatically qualifies, he's going to play. Now, let's say hypothetically he finishes 7th, 8th, 9th, maybe even 10th in the standings once the qualification process is over. Now, he did say that if that happens, he will talk to the 6 that did qualify, get a sense of their feelings about him being a playing captain on the team, and then make a decision from there. But tonight is, again, going to be a special night for Keegan Bradley. But he is going to come out here, hopefully, and have his focus on trying to compete to win the Truist Championship.
T. Lou, I'm fascinated about this dinner. Anytime a big group gathers together, it could be a family table for Thanksgiving. There could be some awkwardness among family members, so surely some awkwardness among professional golfers in this splintered era that we live in. You mentioned Bryson. You mentioned Brooks. Do you think any hard feelings we push to the side because they're all kind of playing for the red, white, and blue? Or could there be some, you know, hurt feelings and some awkward silences at this dinner?
Well, I think let's start with Brooks Koepka. Brooks was part of the 2023 team. He lives in South Florida in the Jupiter area, where most of the players that are on that team live. So he has a familiarity with a lot of those players, those elite players that will be at this dinner tonight. And he really hasn't tried to trash the PGA Tour in their now long battle against each other, and we'll see if they come together or not. So I don't really see Brooks being a problem. And for that matter, although Bryson had some friction when he left the PGA Tour to go to LIV Golf, there was some tension, it seemed like, between him and the PGA Tour players. That seems to have eroded. And there's a couple of reasons why. I think Bryson is a little more receptive, not only to the audience, but to the current PGA Tour players. He's trying to make himself amicable, likable with the PGA Tour players. In other words, he's putting the work in to try to make that happen. And secondly, and maybe the most important thing, is that just like that Liam Neeson character in the movie Taken, he has a particular set of skills that really can benefit in team play, considering how far he hits the ball. He's going to be great in both formats, foursome or four ball, and they see the talent that he has. I mean, last year, three top tens in four major championships, including a victory at the U.S. Open, and he played well at the Masters this year. So they would love to have him tee it up for the red, white, and blue at Bethpage.
Liam Neeson, very good in stressful situations, and Bryson DeChambeau has been as well. T. Lou, with some great reporting from the city of brotherly love. Your reaction to this dinner, I think it's a great idea. Get out in front of it. Get it done early. Get the guys in the room. Get them, you know, put some music on, some maybe NBC Ryder Cup music, some red, white, and blue. Do whatever you have to do to get everybody, you know, together, any awkwardness out of the way, and get on the same page for one goal.
Yeah, and past captains have done that as well. Zach Johnson had dinners with his guys before the Ryder Cup in Rome. I don't really think there's going to be any awkwardness on any kind of individual level here. I mean, these guys have played team golf together. Certainly they didn't play the President's Cup together last year. But you would expect that Koepka and DeChambeau would be the two most likely guys to be invited to the dinner, because they are the two most likely guys on LIV to potentially qualify for a Ryder Cup. It will be interesting to see, is it a captain's pick scenario or is it a qualification scenario, because they don't have that many opportunities to earn points on LIV, certainly, or outside of that ecosystem. And it's an interesting scenario that Keegan finds himself in here, because there's a lot of depth at the top of his team in that first six.
Right.
Once you get beyond that, there's a lot of guys in the mix right now who don't have experience. And we just saw some of the qualifiers there. But you've got Andrew Novak in there. You've got Maverick McNealy, JJ Spahn. Russell Henley's currently in the top six. Played the President's Cup last year. Has never played a Ryder Cup. And pretty much everyone who's played Ryder Cup tells you it's a very different animal when you get out there representing your flag in that scenario on the first tee. And certainly he's going to be at Bethpage Black. So I think it'll be an interesting dilemma Keegan's going to find himself in, because he might just really need the experience of a Koepka or a DeChambeau when it comes to Bethpage Black, even if they're not automatically in that top six or even in their top 12.
That's a good point. I think his focus and competitiveness as a player will lend to some great strengths as a captain. And I think when he does stand in front of the room tonight with those players, I think that'll be leaping off his body, that emotion. And I think any little nitpicking or disappointment or, you know, bickering of the past, when you're looking at a teary-eyed Keegan Bradley who's talking about representing his country and being the captain, I think that's going to make those guys want to run through a wall for him.
Yeah, and I think Keegan also has a past close friendship, for instance, with Phil Mickelson that has survived Mickelson going to LIV and litigating against the tour as well. So whatever hard feelings have existed in the past, I think there's somewhat, the ice has melted a little bit in terms of individual players over the last couple of years. I don't expect that it's going to be a significant dynamic. If it wasn't a major dynamic back in 2023, it's not going to be this year.
Well, I know one man who's desperately wanted to play for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. That is one Billy Horschel. Horschel with two top 10 finishes on tour so far in 2025, and of course a big part of TGL's inaugural champions, Atlanta Drive. Billy gave an update today on his health. Take a listen.
Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. First off, thank you to everyone who's reached out over the last couple of weeks after I withdrew from Zurich Classic. But after meeting with doctors and talking with my team, we're going to have right hip surgery early next week out in Colorado. It's an unfortunate situation with so many great events left on the calendar, but this is a preventative measure. I'm already looking forward to getting the rehab started, getting back to practicing, and hopefully returning to the golf course in late summer, early fall. But I just want to say I've got an unbelievable support system with my family, friends, with sponsors and partners, and I can't thank them enough for their continued support. And we'll get through this, and we will continue to share positive news on how the rehab is going. Once again, thanks for everyone's support, and I will talk to you all later.
Bummed out for Billy Ho. Wish him the best in his surgery. He's someone who I think is tailor-made for team competition, did compete for the United States in the President's Cup, lacking that Ryder Cup on the resume.
Yeah, and it's not been that long since he actually won. He won last year on the PGA Tour, the Corrales Punta Cana Championship as well. Took down Rory McIlroy in that playoff at Wentworth as well. I mean, he's a fiery guy. He's the kind of guy who's always had that passion to get to the Ryder Cup team. The first time I ever saw Billy Horschel was at the Walker Cup. That was at Royal County Down back in 2007. Not, which Billy will admit, not his proudest week in terms of his sort of theatrics that he had going on that week, but there was no doubting the passion that he brought to it as well. And it's, I wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way into the backroom team for this Ryder Cup with Keegan Bradley as well. He's the kind of guy that you'd want in there. It's just a shame that coming up to the bigger individual events, that he's out of the mix. I mean, he was so close to winning the Open Championship last year at Royal Troon, finished tight second, his best ever major finish. So I'm sure he was kind of looking forward to getting back into that kind of the meat of the season. This is not when you want to be leaving the professional tour for an injury with three majors and a Ryder Cup and the entire playoff schedule left on the calendar at this point. So it does suggest how seriously he's taking the injury if he's willing to avoid attempting to play through what is really the most important part of the year.
Would have mixed in very nicely with those fans, Farmingdale, New York, Bethpage Black, but maybe he'll be there anyway, if not as a player, perhaps holding a walkie-talkie.
And he's got more time to hang with us on the show now.
He's welcome anytime. We appreciate the update, Billy Ho, and wish you the best in your recovery. Golf Today is back after this. We're back on Golf Today, folks. Since Colin Morikawa turned pro back in 2019, he's had one guy on the bag, that man, J.J. Jakovac. But some surprising news last week as Morikawa and Jakovac have parted ways. And they've done some wonderful things together. As you look at Colin's resume alongside J.J., look at that. Two major championships, six wins total, the last at Bay Current Classic in 2023. Event formerly known as the Zozo. Now, Morikawa is now working with Joe Greiner on the bag. Greiner, of course, longtime caddy for Max Homa. The duo split ahead of the Masters. And Greiner also on the bag temporarily for Justin Thomas when JT won the RBC Heritage. So with more on Morikawa and Greiner's new partnership, let's welcome back Todd Lewis from Philadelphia.
Well, Damon, it happens all the time out here on the PGA Tour. Players leave caddies, caddies leave players, and ultimately they move on. And sometimes it's a positive breath of fresh air. But in regards to Colin Morikawa and his caddy, JJ, you're right. They have spent a lot of time together and done some wonderful things over the past 6 years, including those two major championships they won together and multiple other PGA Tour events. But Colin said that things just weren't feeling right as of late. And if you look at his last two events, beginning with the RBC Heritage, he was playing okay after the first two rounds, but then a Saturday 77 really threw him off to try to compete and win that tournament. Then he moves on to the Zurich Classic, where he was teaming up with Kurt Kitayama. And I know this is a team event, but they missed the cut there as well. Now, Colin has played pretty well so far in 2025. He's got three top tens and a couple of runner-up finishes, but he just has not won. So he said things aren't feeling right, and they decided to go their separate ways in what was, yes, a big surprise. But he does pick up Joe Greiner, who is a very accomplished caddy, and he knew that Joe Greiner was out there. Maybe that's a big reason why that move happened. Joe Greiner left Max Homa. Now he went to Justin Thomas for a few weeks, was on the bag when he won at the RBC Heritage, and now he is on full-time with Colin Morikawa. Watch them today working on the range primarily, trying to sort out distances and maybe work on some new equipment. Then they went out to try to check out this golf course here at Philly Cricket Club. So we will see how this dynamic works out. It usually takes a little while, an event or two, before both the player and the caddy, when they are first teamed up together to get into a great rhythm. We'll see how it plays out here on a brand new golf course. It may be an actual advantage that they're playing a brand new golf course because they are equal with everyone else in the field here and trying to learn Philly Cricket Club. In regards to Justin Thomas, quickly, of course, Joe Greiner was on the bag when he won at RBC Heritage. He was a sub as Matt Minister, his normal caddy, was sitting out because of back issues. Matt also missed the Masters as well. Well, Matt is back on the bag here working with his guy, JT, as they tee it up for the Truist Championship. Guys?
T. Lou at Philadelphia Cricket Club on the relationships, the evolving ones between
some players. Revolving door.
And caddies. It is interesting, and he brings up a great point. Couple runner-up finishes for Colin this year as you watch him on the driving range. And think about those runner-ups. Yeah, he lost by three to Hideki at the Century, but if Russell Henley makes five on 16 or makes four on 16 at Bay Hill and they go to a playoff, and if Colin wins that, is this the decision that he makes? This is the reminder to me just how fine the margins are in this game, and the distance between victory and caddy change can be razor thin.
Yeah, it's a fickle business these guys are in, and it's an even more fickle business the caddies are in, because if a player gets to the point where the frustration is built up, and I think Morikawa has reached that point in coming so close so often.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't won in a year and a half, but Colin Morikawa is the fourth-ranked player in the world. Only Xander Schauffele, Rory McIlroy, and Scottie Scheffler are higher in the world rankings than this guy, which is a testament to how well he's playing all the time, but he's not winning.
Yeah.
So something's got to change in that setup, and it certainly gets very awkward if you're going to change a coach. That becomes a much more onerous task, because then you're acknowledging that you're going to take a step back in your game or you're going to go down a different road. Eventually, I think the caddy becomes the easier man. And it's also the person you're spending most time with.
Yeah.
And so I think it can corrode over time, but JJ is not a caddy who's going to be out of work very long.
Right. And Joe Greiner was not out of work very long either. And I also think it speaks to this generation of player-caddy relationship. You know, back in the day, I mean, the caddy was supposed to just show up, keep up, and shut up.
Yeah.
Now they're best friends. They're like therapists.
Amateur psychologists.
They really are. And a lot of the players refer to them as we. It's like they're like teammates. It's just a different era. They're close friends. And in the case of Max Homa and Joe Greiner, I mean, they grew up together playing golf in Southern California. And when Max was struggling, he said he never wanted to let the golf become an imposition to their friendship. So I think a little more complicated in the modern era, the player-caddy relationship, than it was in the 1970s.
I certainly think that's true with a lot of these players as well. And when payroll gets involved, friendship becomes very awkward. But, you know, these guys are all very good at what they do, and I think they're very much respected. And players look for different things than they do now. And I think a comfort factor is what players look for. You go back to the days when it was Jack Nicklaus running around with Angelo Argay, or it was Tom Watson with Bruce Edwards. These guys very much owned their own game. They owned every process of their game. What they looked for in a caddy was probably very different than what a lot of these guys are looking for these days. There is a need for a comfort factor with the guy standing next to them. And maybe that actually helps some of these guys. But, you know, I don't think Scottie Scheffler knew Ted Scott particularly well before he connected with him, and he's got 14 tour wins since then.
Yeah, a lot of thoroughbreds, the top of the official world golf ranking. Stay with us, folks. We're about to make the turn here on Golf Today. Michelle Wee West joins the show. She gets set to host this week's LPGA Tour stop at beautiful Liberty National. We're back right after this.
Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack as hour two of Golf Today rolls on here. We have a couple of phenoms coming up on the show today. That's always a dicey business in sport. I mean, you've covered a lot of different sports. You've seen a lot of phenomenal talents at a very young age. It's remarkable how many of them don't actually get to where Michelle Wee got to in life.
I'm always a little nervous for the teenage superstars. Nervous for Lydia Ko. I think she's turned out okay. I'm nervous for Blades Brown. I got to meet Blades in Mexico this year. His dad, Park, very nice family.
He's doing pretty well.
He's doing pretty well also.
But there are Ty Tryons and other examples out there.
There are cautionary tales. It's true. I think it's a hard business they're getting into. The sports business is tough, whether you're dribbling a basketball, a high school phenom like Kobe Bryant or Kevin Garnett turning pro, skipping college, or if you're not going to college in a golf business and trying to find your way. I do think that the young players of this generation, they do have the sports psychologists early, and the team, the therapists around them. Is it possible already that Miles Russell's influencing and inspiring Rebel already?
It's an interesting question, though, when you have the team, they clearly have the ability, they have all of the structure around them. It doesn't answer the question whether or not they have the actual emotional maturity to be thrown into the kind of world that they're thrown into. Certainly when, you know, your self-worth gets judged by the number you write on a scorecard at the end of the day. And, you know, every troll on the interwebs is there waiting for you every time you have a bad day.
Right.
You need kind of a thicker skin to be out there at that level of elite sport these days. And I'm not sure a lot of those kids have that. You kind of need to be insulated from a lot.
I bet it's harder today with the access that people have to you by the click of a phone. They can get into your DMs and tell you how they feel. We had that story earlier about the Korn Ferry Tour player.
Especially if they've got money riding on your performance.
Exactly. And people can be very mean these days. And I listened to a podcast, the Served podcast with Andy Roddick, had Marty Fish on. Marty has been so open about the mental health challenges that he has faced. Did a documentary on Netflix. And there's a lot of players. You know, think about Casper Ruud in tennis has talked about it. Bubba Watson in our game of golf has talked about it. Madison Keys, who broke through for a major slam at the Australian
Osaka
Open.
Walked away as number one for that reason.
I think it's harder now just because of the access that people have to you. You need not just a thick skin, but a good team and some good mental health connections as well, I imagine, to be successful, especially if you're at a tender age of 14, 15, or 16.
And that's, I suppose, you know, you've right now the game is presumably still a passion.
Sure.
For Raymond as a 14-year-old kid. This elevates the passion to a different level. It's a different level of scrutiny as well. And I guess when we talk to him, we'll find out what are the ambitions within golf as well. It's very difficult when you achieve a certain kind of prominence or notoriety at a young age to retain the love of the game. And that's what I always found was remarkable about, just as an example, the Williams sisters in tennis. And Venus is in her 40s. She's still out there playing just for an undiluted love of the game.
Yeah.
And it's so unusual to actually see that where the phenom doesn't burn out. You know, if you read Andre Agassi's autobiography, you get a lot of sense of how that actually can just dissipate very quickly when success comes young. Sort of a fascinating time in any young athlete's career just to see how they can hang on to the love.
Well, someone who knows all about being a young teen phenom. Of course, we're talking about Michelle Wee West, one of the most recognizable golfers of this generation. She captured that 2014 U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst number two. Took the lead and never looked back. Despite a double bogey on 16 in the final round, she finished strong, going one under in her final two holes to win the first major championship.
And then at the 2023 U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach, Michelle made her final professional start. It was a pretty emotional week for her. She'd announced her retirement from competitive golf the year prior, but decided to make that Open at Pebble the final start of a storied career. And this is the bio she accomplished. Obviously, that major championship victory, 5 LPGA Tour wins, the last coming at the HSBC in 2018, five-time member of the Solheim Cup team, and of course, the youngest champion of the US Women's Amateur Public Links back as a 13-year-old in 2003.
Wow. And Michelle's impact on the pro game still being felt today, also being felt the amateur game as well. Since 2023, she's been the tournament host for the Mizuho Americas Open, and it's quickly become one of the most prestigious events on the LPGA schedule each year, not to mention a couple of winners have been Rose Zhang and Nelly Korda. So great to have Michelle Wee West with us on this Tuesday. Michelle, thanks so much for the time. I want to ask you, you know, when you're a player, you can measure success by the score you shot, maybe the stats. Did you make the cut? Did you take home the trophy? How do you measure success as a tournament host?
Well, you know, I think the Mizuho Americas Open is so unique in itself. The format is so amazing. So I think how we measure success this week is the impact that we've made. And already in 3 short years, the success, the impact on the next future generation has been incredible. As you saw a little while ago, Yana Wilson was our inaugural junior champion, and already a full circle moment. She's making a pro debut here this week in the pro field. So it's already amazing to see the work that we've done in terms of catapulting catapulting the next future generation forward. And these top 24 junior girls that are in the field this week are learning so much. And it's amazing to be a part of that journey. The mentorship program, the player experience are all something that we measure success by. And we could not be more happier that we're renewing for 5 more years and to continue to see the impact that we've made.
As your role evolves in the game from player to, I suppose, stateswoman and host as well, Michelle, has that been an easy transition for you?
You know, of course I want to jump in and play, but what has been amazing post-retirement for me is that I actually have the space and the energy to do the things that I'm passionate about, which is, you know, being involved in the game, growing the game, helping juniors out. I mean, this tournament is extremely special to me, not only because I'm a tournament host, but, you know, if you've seen the my history and how I got into the game, I qualified for my first LPGA event when I was 12. And, you know, as you all know, I started my career that way. I played in a lot of LPGA tournaments when I was a junior golfer. So this tournament means a lot for me because the fact that these girls are in the field, they're able to be inside the ropes with their idols and their role models, and with our mentorship program, they're playing, you know, we pair a junior up with the LPGA pro this week. And it really pushes you forward. So all the stuff that we're doing this week, we're so excited. We're so grateful for every single pro that's in the field. As you saw, Rose Zhang won our inaugural tournament. Nelly Korda won last year. And we have 120 of the top LPGA players in our field, and they all chose to be here, and they all chose knowing that there's juniors in the field, knowing that it's a big week of mentorship. It's amazing to see the work that the LPGA players and how they're giving back in this week. So overall, it's been I would say a pretty seamless transition. Obviously, I have an amazing team behind me. XL Sports has been amazing in helping me through that transition. They're also running this event. So I have a lot of people making me look good this week. And it's just fun to be here and connect with the players again.
Well, Michelle, I was on the Mizuho Instagram page yesterday, and you're all over it. You're having meals with the kids and doing the selfie thing and dancing with them and laughing with them. What's your overriding message to these young people? Many of them want to embark on the same career that you were so successful in.
Yeah, I mean, my big message to them is this week not to be afraid to go up to players and ask questions, you know, ask them anything they want. The players in our field, you know, we want to help. We want to be connected with the juniors. And I told them, we're just as shy as you are. So it's a good week to gain some confidence and go up to your idols and ask some questions. It's an amazing opportunity to be inside the ropes with them. They're going to be, it's two concurrent fields. And Thursday, Friday, they'll play separately. But on the weekend, the number one, number two LPGA player on their field will be paired with the number one junior in the junior field. So the juniors will be paired with the pros on the weekend. And it's the final groups. They're going to be in the final groups. And so I'm really excited for them. I love spending any time I can get with these junior girls. I have so much fun with them. And last night was no exception.
Let's stay on this topic of mentorship for a moment, Michelle. We had Amy Alcott on the show a couple of weeks ago. And she said she was kind of surprised that younger players on tour these days don't seem to gravitate towards the veterans as much, that they don't look for guidance or mentorship. Did you have somebody that you turned to when you first came out on tour? And did you play that role for others when you were still competing?
Yeah, 100%. When I first came on tour, I mean, I was very, very young. And, you know, it's intimidating. It's really intimidating to go up to your idol and be like, hey, mentor me. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. I was very fortunate. Meg Mallon, I was paired with her in a pro-am, and she immediately was so warm to me. And I remember we did like a closest to the pin contest, and she was like, oh, a loser has to dye their hair. And it was so amazing that she, this Hall of Famer, this someone I looked up to, really brought it down to my level as a 13-year-old and really related to me. And, you know, her and Beth Daniel have been like my second moms on tour, someone that I could always go up to and ask anything. And that's why this week is extremely important to me, because we kind of were forcing them to be in a situation, because, you know, the pros are shy, the juniors are shy. So we're just like making it less awkward. We're pairing each pro with the junior. And they're, like I said, they're playing a practice round together. They're exchanging numbers. And they're having a meal together. And it's really amazing. Now this being the third year, it's amazing to see the relationships that they have cultivated. And I think they keep in touch and whatnot. But yeah, mentors are so important. And it is hard, though. It is hard to go up to someone and ask for it. So I hope this creates an organic environment for that to happen.
You know, Michelle, last year, Brittany Lincecum and Lexi Thompson announced they were stepping away from competitive golf. Well, we've seen them both in 2025, quite a bit of Lexi. Any chance that we might see you pick up the 14 clubs again, even as busy as you are as a wife, as a mother, and a businesswoman?
Well, you know, I'll be playing in the Pro-Am tomorrow, but that's probably as far as you'll see.
Well, what about
You know, I mean, hopefully, I mean, maybe one day. I don't know. Never say never, but probably.
Do you understand, I guess, their competitive urges, the difficulty to walk away, the reason that they want to come back and mix it up here and there?
Oh, I completely understand. The competitiveness never goes away. And, you know, when you're spending your entire life as an athlete, the adrenaline rush, working so hard for something, you can't replicate that anywhere else in your life. There will be no feeling that can be replicated when you have to make a 3-footer to win. Like the nervousness, the ups and downs that come with that. It's golf, competitive sports is such an incredible thing. I completely understand. You know, and you never, I don't know, I'll never say never.
Well, what about the pressure of choosing somebody to make a 3-footer for you, Michelle? You played 5 Solheim Cups. If the captaincy is offered to you, would you accept it?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I would love to. You know, I would love to down the line. I think there's some amazing players that should be captain. And one of these days, I would love to be captain of Solheim if the opportunity ever came to me.
Michelle, you had so many eyeballs on you, height of power when you were playing, so much in terms of the expectation world that they wanted on you, people wanted on you, whether it was sports writers, golf writers, television. How much do you empathize with Nelly Korda as the face of the LPGA and folks asking her to be the Caitlin Clark of golf, as it were?
Yeah, you know, I completely understand. I mean, she has a lot on her shoulders. I think she has a great head on her shoulders, and I think she's handling the pressure really well. I think she's learning how to lean on her team and her support system, and she's learning how to say no to things, which is, I think, also very important to do. I think it's very easy to get sucked in and, you know, just say yes to everything, to feel like you need to do everything. But, you know, I think she has very strong personal boundaries, which I think is amazing. But yeah, she's got a great head on her shoulders. I mean, I, for one, would love to see her win our event. You know, I thought it was really great last year. But, you know, it's a lot of pressure for these young girls to have that much pressure on them. And I completely empathize.
Michelle, we have a guest coming up on the show now, Raymond Rebel. He's made it all the way to final qualifying for the U.S. Open, trying to play his way into Oakmont. He's 14 years old. If anybody's in a position to offer advice on how to kind of maintain a love of the game at this age, in this scenario with you, what would your advice to him be?
Yeah, you know, I would say don't forget that it's a game. I think a lot of times we start off, obviously, because we love the game. And, you know, once it gets so serious, we forget that golf is a game, and that you should just keep on playing it and enjoy the lows, the difficulties of the game. That's what's so beautiful about golf as well, too, is just how much you have to figure out.
Well, Michelle, we appreciate your insight in a few minutes. Should be a great weekend at Liberty National with the Mizuho. Best of luck hosting this week. I'm sure we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
There she is, winner of the U.S. Women's Open and now tournament host, Michelle Wee West. And speaking of the U.S. Women's Open, Eamon, before we go to break, some cool news. Yanni Sen has punched her ticket to the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills. The five-time major champ and former world number one emerged from a 5-for-1 playoff in her Phoenix, Arizona qualifier. Congrats